I mean, there's aromatherapy, there's psychotherapy, and there's music therapy. Do you believe in that stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Now, I'll tell you why. I play the piano every Tuesday in the Royal Hospital Donnybrook for the sing song for the old dears in the wheelchairs. Now, you look at these old dears in the wheelchairs and you think they're already dead. And I start up on the piano with the rhythmic, they love the songs. And suddenly they come to life. The feet start tapping in the wheelchairs and the hands start clapping. These old people that you thought were dead. So that's my story.
The following programme, called Music is Good for You, was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland under the Sound and Vision Scheme. Music is Good for You is the umbrella name for a four-part series of programmes about music. The first programme is entitled Music and Wellbeing, and looks at why people start music in the first place and the benefits of playing and listening to music.
Liberty's composer and singer, James Whelan, on why music is vital for him.
Well, if I didn't have music, Jerry, life would be very sad.
Why?
I've always listened to music on the radio, because music, as a lot of people would say, music is a kind of a tranquilizer. It calms me down. It goes into the subconscious mind and it does something for you that nothing else can do. Better than any tranquilizer. They've proven even that when you play music to cows, milking cows, that they give more milk. So, I mean, it's very good for children as well to stop them getting into trouble, stop them fighting. Music is very, very good for people. It enters, real good music enters the soul sometimes.
I travelled over to the Pro Cathedral, where I met the renowned organist, Professor Gerard Gillan.
Professor Gillan became interested in organ music at the tender age of 6. He then went on to the Municipal School of Music, now DIT, where he was fortunate enough to become a piano pupil of one of the finest teachers of piano in the city, and that is Elizabeth Costello.
Before myself and Gerard got into the well-being aspect of music, he related how and why he got into music in the first place.
When did you start music? I could say, when did you start music, Professor Gillan, and almost why as well?
Well, I started at a very early age. I started playing the piano, I suppose, about the age of 5 or 6. I think I started formal lessons about the age of 7. Why? That's very, very hard to say. I mean, there was just an inner compulsion to me. I was fascinated by pianos. We didn't have a piano at my own home, but our next door neighbour did, and I would pester them just to play the piano. So eventually my parents got the message and got a piano. And I was very lucky in that regard. But you have to say why, I just don't know. I have a feeling that nature, in its inscrutable way, directs us in various different directions. I heard a composer once, one of our distinguished composers, Gerald Barry, say once, he was asked, why did he compose? And he said, I compose because I have to compose. He said, I simply have to. He said, money earnings are irrelevant. Quite frankly, he said, even if I was paid nothing, I would still compose.
My conversation with Professor Gerard Gillan will further underline the value of music in one's life.
Could I say to you, pity those, therefore, who don't appreciate music, do music?
Yes, I think it is a great richness that somehow or other has evaded them. Some people, I suppose, are just not particularly interested in music. They're interested in other things. But I think most human beings are interested in music to some extent. I mean, the whole range of music is so diverse, and it's very easy to pigeonhole ourselves into where we like one genre of music as opposed to another. But I think the human being that doesn't like some form of music is a very, very rare specimen indeed.
And they're missing out.
They're certainly missing out. And of course, as I said, the richness of music, it's like art. I mean, there's a tremendous richness there in the pictorial world through art, which, unless you visited a gallery and so on, you will never experience. That's also another great impoverishment.
Perhaps we can summarise briefly the words of Professor Gerard Gillan and say that music enriches the lives of everybody. And we can't complain about genre because there is myriad types of music. Prompted by me, we both agreed that you're missing out on something if you don't take advantage of music. Now we take leave of Professor Gerard Gillan and we head to Trinity College Dublin, where I meet Dr. Evangelia Regacchi, who since September 2010 has been Assistant Professor in Composition at Trinity College Dublin, where she is also the Director of the Music Composition Centre and the newly created MPhil in Composition. As with Professor Gillan, I ask her why she took up music in the first place.
From curiosity. I was brought up in Greece, and music, classical music, it's not something you see every day. So for me it was something exotic and something wonderful, and I wanted to learn more.
And we cannot say that it was your family who pushed you into classical music.
No, but my family were always very encouraging in whatever I chose to do.
Were they a musical family?
No, not at all.
An educated family?
Yes, I would think so. They like reading a lot, but neither of them has been to a university. But they like reading a lot, so they were very open-minded.
What does music give to you in terms of the heart, the mind, the body, the soul, the spirit?
Music can give to all of what you mention as a good, you know, not only music, everything that you enjoy in life opens up your mind and your experiences and gives you something different, something else. So I'm not doing music from a utilistic point of view only for pleasure. I like to understand more and demystify the music, because music can be something very holy. If sometimes you can have a transcendence, an experience in a concert, and you want to understand more. So I feel lucky that I study music, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
And is music, as opposed to playing tennis, is it special in some way to give you this insight?
There is no comparison, really, because as music is holy for me, sports is holy for somebody else. Again, they offer a transcendence.
Have you yourself ever used music just in a very simple way, in a simple way to affect your mood or to help you through a difficult day?
Of course, but this is something consciously or unconsciously everybody does. From the car, from when you go into a shop and you get into the mood of listening something, even when you're out in the street and you listen, you know, the cars or the birds, this is again music.
Here's a quick vox pop from a lady I came across, and she was giving a drumming class to absolute beginners. I asked her if banging drums chaotically was really only noise.
Just picture a ball in your stomach, a red ball, and we're going to make it as big and bright and red as we can. We're going to lift it up and we're going to drum, and we're going to drum really fast and really hard, and we're going to go up and down and up and down in our volume, and then we're ready to get that ball out. We're going to lift it up and we're going to roar, and every time without fail they drum, they scream, and they laugh like maniacs afterwards.
It's not noise really, is it?
There's a freedom in drumming. Okay, there is a sense of noise, there's a chaos, so through that noise you develop your order.
The Violin Project was launched in September 2006 at St. Agnes' School and Skull Column in Crumlin.
It was just in time at the time for the European Year of Equal Opportunity for Everyone, and it's truly inclusive. This project fulfills the vision of a sister, Bernadette Sweeney, who wanted every child to have the chance to find their own inner creativity. I went out there
and I spoke to a group of parents, and these parents are part of an orchestra, and they were in rehearsal for a future concert. Here's a selection of voices from the orchestra.
And Sarah, what took you to music? What attracted you to music?
I've always liked music, like even growing up as a child, like I've always liked music, and the kids started in the orchestra and I just liked to learn something different. So I started off first on the violin, but I couldn't take to it, so I started the cello last week, and I love playing the cello.
I do. I get a friend of mine who just laughs every time I say I'm going to practice the violin, and then we're doing a concert up in Navan, where he lives, and he'll come down and watch that, and I know he'll get great enjoyment out of it.
And that will make his chin hit the floor. Yeah.
And the slagging I get, because I play the viola, I don't play, I have a play, learning the viola, and people said, what's that? And they haven't a clue. They think you put that between your legs. You know, like cello, yeah. And so that's amazed me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And the tone is totally different. But this man here now, he's probably one of the best of us. He's played a bit.
Fantastic, Jonathan.
Well, I played the violin as a child, and then because I didn't have a context in which to play it, I just gave it up. And the violin lay in the attic for over 40 years. And then I heard about the St. Agnes project on the radio, and I said, I'll come down and have a look. And I couldn't believe what I saw and what I heard, and I joined, and I've really, really enjoyed it. It's great, and the social aspect is fantastic.
From merely focusing on why these parents of the St. Agnes Orchestra, on why they started music in the first place, we now move slowly towards the benefits of music for them and for their children.
How do you feel when you play music?
It relaxes you. I get really relaxed playing it, and you don't get stressed. It relieves all that stress.
Every child is happy. They run in and out of the music room in here, no matter who's playing. Lunch break, they decide to come in here and take a bit of practice. Like, I mean, it's not, it just brings everybody closer.
Roy, kind of almost music brings the community together.
That's exactly what you're saying. It's a community base. It's a whole community. Everybody's invited and everybody feels welcome. We meet up here on the Monday night as well, and that's purely just parents. And it's actually like a social gathering. You would come in here and you would hear people say, oh, I thought Monday night would never come. Because that's what it is. We live for Mondays and Tuesdays.
Would music make you cry?
Does. X Factor makes me cry, for God's sake. Yes, it does. No, not in a bad way, in a good way, it'd be kind of tears of joy. You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, I'm cringing because I can't play that. No, definitely not.
What does the playing the viola do to you? Is it a little bit of work, or does it actually bring you somewhere? Does it take you someplace?
I absolutely love it. When you're playing, you just forget about everything. Like, you just get lost in the music, as they say. You just forget about life outside for 2 hours when I'm here, and I just love it. Absolutely love it. Like, I choose to come here. To tell you the truth, I was suffering with postnatal depression, and to get me out of the house, I joined up, and it's the best thing I ever did. Like, the confidence it's given me, and also.
And does that confidence come because you're with a gang of people in here, or because you actually do concerts?
Oh, we do concerts, and with a gang of people, like, you meet new friends, and you get confidence because you're involved with something, and the concerts are great. Like, the crowds go mad for us.
And when you're playing music in a concert, do you kind of escape onto another planet, or is it very much your feet are on the ground there?
No, you get totally lost. Like, you beforehand, you're all nervous and you see these people in the crowd and you just totally forget about it and you just play your music. Like,
oh, don't mind me saying so. That would say to me that everybody should be, I'm exaggerating, should be forced to play music, because it does sound like it doesn't do any harm.
No, definitely doesn't do any harm. Like, if it did harm to you, it's just leave, do you know what I mean? But no, it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Remember, this programme is entitled Music and Wellbeing. We now hear from one of the parents of the St. Agnes Orchestra a specific example of music and health.
So are we talking here now about the mind, the body and the soul?
Yes, all three.
The reason I took it up was that I had a stroke earlier this year, and I had to get something to in other words, practice to get my left hand working and also to get my brain working again. And I found that music, and Joanna introduced me to the St. Agnes's choir. Orchestra. Adult orchestra. And I've been here since May, and I've played in a couple of concerts. And learning, first time ever, learning to read music. It's tremendously social. We're all helping each other. It's a wonderful group exercise. It's probably, some might say it's therapy, but it's wonderful. We come along and everybody helps each other and we show each other what to do. I think it's one of the best things I've ever done. This is an amazing for eye-to-hand coordination. And that's what all football, tennis, anything is about that. It's you're watching three things. Your right hand is working, your left hand is working, your eyes are working on the thing and the whole lot is going. Can you imagine what that would do for a child's concentration?
It could be absolutely fantastic. I can answer that one because I have a 10-year-old with ADH. And his concentration is zero. You could not get him to sit at a table to eat his dinner without moving 50 times. And he sits in there and he plays his violin and he loves it. He lives for his Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Once again, to underline the fact that these parents of the St. Agnes Orchestra are speaking spontaneously about the benefits of music. Here now is another parent who speaks about the benefits of music for intellectual capacity and for success at school.
You were saying you see the reason for it. What is the reason for
putting
children?
Well, I think it helps with your thinking and your logic and how it works. And I do think with children it helps at school with concentration, and it's very important for them. And they may not appreciate it when they're at school, but when they leave, I think it gives you a love of the music. You appreciate that it's not an easy thing to do, and it's a difficult thing. Musicians make it look so easy, and it's not. There's hours of practice that goes into it.
Now, we're assuming, of course, that music is very important. For some people, it mightn't be.
Joanna Crooks of the St. Agnes Primary School Violin and Orchestra Project and formerly administrator of the Dublin Youth Orchestra and general manager of the National Youth Orchestra of Ireland.
Well, there's a great deal of evidence if you want to go into the neuroscience of it. I mean, if you look at the grimmest level, if somebody does an autopsy, they can look at your brain and they'll tell from the way your brain is whether or not you've been playing music, because it's exercising so many different parts of the brain at one time. And that's one of the reasons why it has an educational benefit to the children.
What about the people who don't realise the benefits of music?
Well, unfortunately, in Ireland, it hasn't been appreciated to the extent that it should have been. If you went to other countries like Canada, America, United Kingdom, Scandinavia, Germany, you'd find that music was taken for granted as part of the curriculum. And there's really very strong evidence, it's way beyond discussion, that if children are exposed to music, particularly up until the age of six, it's going to have a very significant impact on their development.
Midnight in July, see the season spread across the sky. We wake up to a nosy dragonfly against the screen. You just love to bite me where it shows.
I previously mentioned music and success at school. Joanna Crooks delves a little bit deeper into that concept.
Well, the evidence is very clear that the children who get the top marks in Leaving Cert, very often they're musicians too, and that musicians get very, very high marks. Those things go. And when I was with the National Youth Orchestra, the leader of the Junior National Youth Orchestra was the girl who got 8 A1s or whatever it was. You know, they always have those in the paper.
So it just seems to correlate almost.
Well, if you think about playing the violin, you're doing so many different things at once. You're concentrating, you're learning to concentrate from such a young age. You're also learning to persevere because it's a slow business learning. You're learning to have long-term goals and to go step by step slowly to them. And to succeed in the Leaving Cert, you've got to have a long-term goal and put short-term pleasures aside and go for it. And that's a very big lesson to survive in our education system. The rights and wrongs of that, that's another question. But achieving long-term goals is definitely something that music helps children and students to aim for.
One relationship between children loving music might be what their, will this be putting too fine a point on it, might be related to what their mother listened to while the child, before even the child was born.
That's not going too far. I mean, the neuroscientists have done lots of research on that. There's one particular one in he's called Daniel Levitin in the University of Montreal, who's done an enormous amount of work on that. And they do tests on babies who've been exposed to music during the pregnancy, and then they test it 1 year old to see if they still recognize specific pieces of music by turning their heads when it's played. And the babies do consistently recognize the music. So, I mean, from before birth, the music that babies listen to is going to affect them, and it's going to stay with them. I think music helps everybody. You just need to find the right music for the person. But I mean, there's neuroscientists have done an enormous amount of work on that kind of thing and finding out whether music helps people in the last days of a terminal illness and all these kinds of things. Certainly it helps stroke patients and people with Alzheimer's. I really don't know anybody who doesn't like music in some form or other. I think they've done research and they found something like only 3% of the population genuinely don't like any kind of music.
And this 3% of people who don't like music, are they to be pitied? Are they missing out on something?
Not really. I mean, you know, there's lots of things in this world to appreciate. Look out the window. There's trees and sky and walking and all sorts of things to enjoy. I think you just need to find your own thing.
And that was Joanna Crooks finishing up the segment on the St. Agnes Violin Project. Paraphrasing Joanna Crooks, we could say that whether you officially like or dislike music, music is good for everyone.
My love said with heart in hand.
We now talk to another person who can't live without music, Alison Slater. Alison Slater is a composer and writer of contemporary songs. She also sings traditional music. She also has a master's in traditional music performance from the University of Limerick. I asked her how come she was so lucky to have chosen music as a career.
Well, it wasn't so much luck. I always wrote poetry, and I did that for years. So I would have been kind of not a poet, but that definitely would have been my passion, would have been for words. And I won a poetry competition when I was 7. It was a poem about Halloween, and it was Oscailge. It started from a very young age. And then I just kind of, I can't remember how the interest came, but I did notice the guitar, and I picked it up at around 18, 19, and didn't really learn it properly, but definitely made a connection with music. Actually, Bob Dylan, listening to Bob Dylan, was where I got the connection between words and melody and music, where before I would have considered poetry as just poetry. And then I started to see it as song. So, and then I just started to change the poems into songs when I learned a few chords on the guitar. And then I had a very good friend, Helen, who I lived with, and she encouraged me to apply for a course in Ballyfermot. They had a trad music course. And they also have the rock school, but you needed a demo. And I didn't have a demo. So I applied for the trad course and I got on. And I just went from there.
And that was Alison Slater. I then travelled to the music department at St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra, where I met Dr. John O'Flynn. John has many years teaching experience at primary, conservatoire and university levels, and has been centrally involved in advocacy for music education in Ireland. John's research interests include the sociology of music, music education, and contemporary genres and practices of music in Ireland. As with the other guests, I asked John why he started music in the first place. This type of questioning is to set the stage for the ultimate question, which is music and well-being. That is, what are the benefits of music? Dr. John O'Flynn.
John, why did you start music, or do you even remember why you started music?
I don't really remember why, I just remember doing it. I didn't grow up in a particularly famous musical family, just that my parents and grandparents would have been people who, I mean, in the case of one grandfather, he would have played the melodeon. He was from County Clare, and otherwise it would have been kind of like a Dublin sort of I don't know what you want to call it, bourgeois family where there would always be a piano around, people singing. So I learned the piano. That's how I began.
What does music bring to you from a deeply personal point of view or spiritual point of view?
Well, I find music beautiful. From a personal point of view, it can be just getting in after a couple of days of hard days at work and getting into playing some Bach prelude, or it could be listening to something and just being completely attentive to that and losing yourself in that. Or it could be finding yourself in the middle of something like a big performance with the choir and that, and connecting with people in a way that you don't normally connect with people, and making eye contact and ear contact and feeling other people with the same sense of purpose. And that could happen also as a member of an audience.
Can music in any way at all be therapeutic?
Yes, without doubt. I mean, I would be very respectful of my friends and colleagues involved in the clinical practice of music therapy, which is in some ways something quite distinct. But I think everyone would agree that music can be therapeutic, and there would be at this stage quite a bit of research both from music psychology and sociology on how people use music to manage their moods in everyday life, how people use music to, I suppose, mediate and just get by through situations. And I think anybody who's got an iPod will could answer that question for you. But yes, I as an individual believe that it can be therapeutic. Furthermore, we might say that music is not merely something, a fine art or emotional or social, but there, if you wished, you could make a very, very strong case for music as important in terms of cognitive development. And indeed, I can't cite the exact research, but I believe that many prospective employers actually regard music graduates as being very suited towards subsequent careers in technology and in communications and in business, because the actual discipline of studying music involves so many aspects of the brain.
And that was Dr. John O'Flynn from St. Patrick's College, Drumcondra. Whilst travelling around Ireland and Dublin in search of connoisseurs of music, I bumped into a man who plays the violin on the street, a busker named Boris. I asked Boris also why he took up the violin or music in general, and what it gives to him and what it has brought to him.
I was born in Hungary, and I studied there and got education in conservatory, and so why I'm doing music still. Originally, I was born in a musical family. It's all my mother's side played music, and so practically they decided me to play classical music as well. And they said I'm gifted, I have good ears, but I really realized just recently why I'm doing music, and it's because of my experiences about playing and audience reaction. Actually, when I got older, all the instinctive music comprehension became more troubled and made more difficult to see during adolescence.
The benefits of music, you also say that after adolescence, now as an adult, the benefits of music are, did you say something along the lines of connecting with the audience?
Yes, that's right. Since I'm doing busking, I get the most honest audience so far I had. I bet it's even more honest audience than National Concert Hall, because if people don't really like that what they are hearing, they just move on. And if they stay and listen to them and reward and support me, it means something. So I always try to keep in my memory that moments.
Talking to Boris there revealed another angle on music. That is the satisfaction of a satisfied audience. The satisfaction produced to the player by a satisfied audience. Next up, I'm going to talk to Jackie Hayden from Hot Press. Although Jackie was brought up in Sandyford, County Dublin, he remembers it as a very rural upbringing. Trips to Dublin were rare events, reserved for special occasions. In 1960, he started in Sing Street School, which was a bit of a culture shock for him. His mother had hopes of Jackie developing a good career, but he was becoming more and more interested in music. Jackie Hayden, author and journalist with Hot Press, talks to me now about why he does music and what music has given to him.
Well, I suppose it's, apart from giving me a career and a livelihood, it's probably given me endless hours of pleasure and stimulation. And obviously, over the years, a lot of argument and discussion and debate as various people offer different views about this piece of music or that artist or that composer.
Music and well-being, could you give me your interpretation of that statement of mine? Is music connected to well-being, either from your own life or what you see music doing to other people?
I don't think music is only about well-being or only about entertainment or escapism. I think it has a wide range of uses. It can be used, for example, as part of ceremonies. It can be used to relax people. It can also be used to stir up feelings so that people go to war. It has a wide range of uses, and some of those are not necessarily connected with well-being. Sometimes music is deliberately composed and performed to stir up maybe anger or aggression. So I don't have a sort of a simple sort of catch-all understanding of music. I think it has a whole wide range of different uses, including creating well-being, but not only that.
And that was Jackie Hayden from Hot Press. Jackie dealt with the more obvious benefits of music. In his case, for example, they would be stimulation, pleasure, argument and debate even. But what I took from that was that music is not only about well-being. Music is used during ceremonies, it's used to relax people, etc., and for feelings. However, I was particularly struck by his mention of how music can be manipulated, how people can be manipulated by music. I won't go into that any further. I'm now going to talk to Jean Downey, who will explain further how music can stir up people. From 1996 to 1998, Jean Downey was employed by the In-Career Development Unit of the Department of Education and Science to assist in implementing the new Leaving Certificate Music Programme and organising in-service training for music teachers. Jean Downey is also the Course Director of the Graduate Diploma in Education Music and Team Leader for the Master's Degree in Community Music at the University of Limerick. Can you give me some proof that music is actually good for people or good for students?
For people or for students, there plenty of research has been done in relation to why and how music is good for somebody, apart from the fact that there's the value in performing, being part of a team, learning that skill. There's plenty of research into the enjoyment of music making as well, and the fact that when people are listening to music or playing music, that there are chemicals released which are feel good chemicals. So I mean, we have that kind of medical research which is there as well. We also have a lot of neuro research which proves that people who study music tend to improve other skills as well, like memory skills, brain development. It's a different type of intelligence, it's a specific type of intelligence, and when you use that artistic side of your brain, it does tend to, in some ways, enhance the experiences for people.
Does music for Jean Downey have, in some ways, inverted commas, therapeutic qualities?
Well, I'll think of that maybe as the feel-good factor, really, and to me that is therapeutic. And music will always be that part of my life, always. So whether it's just playing music on my own, whether it's playing music or singing music with my community, or enabling others, for me personally, that's a real feel-good factor.
Before we listen to Jean's contribution, tongue-in-cheek, I've inserted an example of what I'm talking about, which is, at the very least, manipulative. Can you see or tell me of an example where music might be manipulated or used in a slightly untoward manner, if we can call it that?
That's a hard one now, just to think about it. I suppose in the political context, and I'm thinking about countries where different cultures have their musics. Maybe the playing of a certain type, and I'm not speaking necessarily about Ireland now, but the playing of a certain type of music might somehow be problematic. As well as that, I suppose we would have, if you think about different cultures, and if you even think about the early church, the fact that people couldn't perform music in the early church until we had the Edict of Milan, and at that point Christianity was considered to be a legal religion, and at that point music could be sung, because the music would have been problematic because people weren't allowed to practice the faith. But if you even think of, just think of a school song, and a match, and two schools go to play each other, and they each have their song, their rival songs, and one tries to sing louder than the other, and you know, that sort of thing, where music can be used in that way. Where you have your teams, and I'm singing my song, but I'm going to sing it much louder because I don't want to hear the other song, and I want my team to hear me. And I know I'm very bad on sport, to be honest with you, but even I listened to one of the interviews after the rugby match and heard that the chanting of the Irish supporters it really encouraged the team to go on to be so successful in that match. But I'm sure it probably had the opposite effect on the other team.
However, music isn't all about propaganda and rabble-rousing. Piece of music is called My Love and is from a CD called The Flower of Life, produced and written and composed by Elijah.
Elijah Levy is a virtuoso level guitar and Chapman stick player. I came across Elijah on Grafton Street some time ago and, as usual, wanted to know why he did music and what music gave to him.
I read somewhere as well that your music is healing music. Do you want to heal people? Do you want to heal yourself? Or do you just... What do you want to do?
I just want to play what comes naturally. I really always wanted to be a rocker. I wanted to tear it up and rock. I wanted to be a badass. And when I started playing Chapman stick, I was playing funk and rock all the time. I played in Camden Town area of London. And in fact, my music was so funky that the kids who were into body piercing and tattoos, I thought they were a rough crowd. They would call me Porn Man. And I couldn't, for the life of me, figure this out. I thought they were making fun of me. So one day I went to one of these chaps. I said, "Why do you call me Porn Man?" And he says, because your music is sexy, porn man. I realized that whole time they were complimenting me. So that's how funky my funk rock was that I earned that nickname. And I just wanted to connect with the audience too. And at a certain point, I noticed that when I played the slower, more melodic stuff, I was getting an audience and making money and supporting my family, myself, and just all around doing better. And honestly, I would have thought it was arrogant if I came out and said, oh, I play healing music. I never really meant to do that. This is something that other people told me. Actually, the phrase was coined when my father, who is a psychologist, he was actually a drummer on the side. He's a professional psychologist, and he works teaching. He teaches seminars of his particular brand of psychology around the world, and he goes to Japan about once a year or so. One of the Japanese psychology students said to my father, who heard my music, he says, your son plays healing music. I was a little surprised to hear this. And he wasn't the first. There was others who said this as well. And so many people came forward and said that your music is healing, or I'm having some kind of heart-opening experience listening to your music, or your music is bringing tears to my eyes, yet I feel better after hearing it. These kinds of expressions. So I felt like something is happening here that's more important than my agenda. And I kind of stepped out of the way and realized that just my love for other people, for what's good for them, is really more important than my ego's desire to rock, or, you know, some childhood fantasy of being a rock star.
Some of Eloy's opinions there reminded me of what Boris the violinist had said previously about how he interacted with his audience, and how when the audience appreciated him, his satisfaction rose. Eloy spoke along the same lines, but we can see also that he was more concerned almost about the audience. And although he didn't set out to heal listeners with his music, he's happy if this is the case. Music as a healer. Now we switch tack, and I travel over to the Pro Cathedral to speak to the director of the Palestrina Choir, Blonid Murphy.
Mentors, make them sit round, Rory, please, and be watching me, please.
Blonid Murphy of the Palestrina Choir.
Singing is good for you in general terms.
Well, for one purely physical reason, the fact you breathe in all the time, so you're giving yourself a huge amount of oxygen boost. So even if you are tired, you get all the oxygen flowing through you and you're suddenly not. And I think it's without doubt. And it appeals to your emotions. If it's going well, there's a great emotional satisfaction. And I think all round it's a very all round good thing.
Okay, and even at that age, you notice that it can improve almost their mood.
Oh yeah, very much. You can see, and often a shy kid who doesn't normally speak much, they really are able to communicate in their singing, and I think that for them is immensely good, and they start to have a voice which is theirs, which is through singing, which is really good.
And this word confidence, for me, it's at times it can be vague. You believe that singing, I don't know if it's singing alone or singing in a group, can increase confidence.
Well, certainly in this context, because they're singing three different sets of repertoire per week. They often sing stuff off by heart. They're singing for big concerts and occasions. So they have to get up there and present themselves. So it doesn't matter if they end up being a musician or a politician or a dentist or a doctor or whatever. They've learned to, under pressure, deliver to a high level. And that's without doubt immensely good for their confidence.
Actually, almost from a bonding point of view, they're singing in a group. And I have read even
football fans in a football stadium, they sing together now. It might not be classical music, but it somehow, does it bring the people together?
Oh, it binds people incredibly. If you can get people singing a hymn or in a football stadium together, they immediately, they're coming together as one, and it's very strong. And I think for a choir, for you, people love singing often in very big choirs, because that feeling of being part of the big, big mass is very, very powerful. Something that was sort of like Karl Marx, they all understood that, the sort of that real element is, you know.
We take our leave of Blawnad Murphy at the Palestrina Choir, and we now talk to Gordon Selender. Gordon sings in three churches at the moment: the Blessed Sacrament Chapel on Bachelor's Walk, St. Peter's Church in Fisborough, and the Adam and Eve Church in Merchants Quay. I met Gordon some time ago preaching with a guitar and singing songs on Liffey Street. Gordon is not alone when he will say that music unites people and lifts people.
I think music should lift the mind and the heart. It should lift the mind and the heart. And I like sacred music because it absolutely, the whole purpose of it is to raise us up and to lift us, give us a vision of heaven. But you know, some people just, for them, they just like listening to music for the sake of listening, and they're not really interested in any kind of a higher sort of a motive to listen to it. But I personally think music is a great medium for uniting people, and it unites people, and you can unite people in different spirits, and not all music, I think, is uplifting. There's a chemical supposedly that's in the released when you listen to Mozart, and it makes you're more able to really focus in and to concentrate in different ways. Any music that lifts my heart and lifts my spirit and makes me feel like I'm closer to God is music that I can affirm.
Aslan are an Irish rock band from Dublin who formed up in 1982. The lead singer is Christy Dignam and the drummer is Billy McGuinness. Why does Billy do music and not work 9 to 5 in another job, for example? Music must be giving you something. What's it giving you?
Do you know what? It gives me joy, and that's it. You think about it, like, people have to go in, if you have a 9 to 5, some people get up and they dread going into work. Like, today at the moment, I'm in Westland Studios, I'm recording. I get up every day and I love going into my work, whether it's travelling to a gig, whether it's in recording, whether it's sitting down writing with the lads. I absolutely 100% adore what I'm doing. And it's a brilliant job. And, you know, I remember when we formed Aslan, we said we'd give it a year. And here we are now, nearly 30 years, and I'm still doing the same thing, and I still have the enjoyment and the hunger for it. So it's given me everything, really. I'm so lucky. I am so lucky that I got into a band and got into music.
Well, that was the drummer of Aslan, Billy McGuinness. There's no doubting what music has done for Billy. Now we look at something more focused on well-being and music, and this is called music therapy. It's an alternative to psychotherapy, according to Angela De Burka. Angela De Burka is a professional musician and a professional music therapist, among other roles. Angela will, first of all, tell us who she is, tell us the benefits of music, and explain to us what music therapy is all about. Angela De Burka.
I am a violinist. I'm a musician. I've been working as a musician for about 20-something years. I've been playing since I was 5. So as a violinist, as a musician, I have played with a rock band in the 80s. I played with Intunua. And then I did a degree in music in Trinity. After that, I worked as a freelance violinist and then I trained as a music therapist. Well-being covers physical and psychological, spiritual. I mean, they're all interconnected. We are all whole beings that are made up of the physical, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual. And an improvement in one area will very likely bring about an improvements or well-being in other areas. Improvement is a funny word, because I mean, what does improvement mean? What does healing mean? What does cure mean? They're all terms that you really have to think about very carefully before you throw them around the place. But well-being is a good one.
You might tell me that, Jerry, music is, would you say, even vital?
Well, it is vital, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing that absolutely everybody responds to. From tiny babies to the oldest people, everyone has an ability, an innate ability to respond to music. Not necessarily one type of music, but music, sound.
Would certain melodies and certain notes be used for certain conditions, or is it not that specific and precise in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's not that specific and precise. It is absolutely open to how the therapist works, the condition or illness or issue that the client has, that it is an alternative to psychotherapy. But generally, music therapists work with children with learning difficulties, with autism, physical disability, emotional difficulties, you name it. There's lots and lots of different types of problems that children will be referred for music therapy for. But generally, for children, it is children who have got some sort of a problem. Adults who fit into the same categories as the ones I've just mentioned, they can also be referred for music therapy. People in prisons, the list is older people, the list is absolutely endless. And then within that, there are many, many approaches. You know, there, you might decide to, you know, you may have goals such as kind of behavioural goals, you know, that you may notice a child who has difficulty with waiting their turn, for example. I'm taking a very simple example. So that might be, there might be all kinds of underlying emotional reasons for that, but one therapist might try to work directly with the emotional difficulties, and another music therapist might work more with the behavioural aspect of it. Now, I'm speaking very generally and very simplistically about this. It's such a huge area with so many different types of approaches that it's quite difficult to tell you about it in such a short period of time. But it can include improvisation, songwriting, pre-existing material, compositions, playing recordings, one-to-one therapy, group therapy. I mean, really, the therapist has to be creative about it and tune into each individual and think, what is the best approach for this person? So you're constantly redesigning how you work.
And would it be all music and no talk, or 50, you know?
Again, that depends. If you have a client who doesn't speak or cannot speak, then there's got to be no speaking, really. You might say something if it's appropriate. It depends. There can be talking. There can be all talking and no music if the client doesn't want to play. It can be 50-50. It can be no talking. It just completely depends.
It's mainly, it's not you parading in whatever circumstance with Bach or
one,
and putting on a really nice, good, expensive CD player. It's there's a lot of percussion involved.
I mean, I might play some Bach on my violin for them, if that's appropriate, and that is more likely to happen in a community music setting than in a music therapy setting. Me as a music therapist, I rarely use pre-existing material. My approach has always been improvisational, that I'm relating to somebody through the creation, the newly created sounds. And I think everyone's experience of listening to whatever they listen to is that they are somehow or other like outside of themselves. Outside of themselves is not a good way of putting it.
Transported, but, or something?
Yeah, it's transcendent. It's that's a very grand word, but their mind is taken off the everyday for that period of time that they listen to music.
And that is professional musician and music therapist Angela De Burke. Paraphrasing and perhaps repeating in some way what Angela has said, we can say everybody has an innate response to music. For a further practical demonstration of the benefits of listening to music and of music in general, we spoke to Hilary Moss, Arts Officer at Talla Hospital.
The other reason that arts are important is that they have a therapeutic role. So, for example, everybody likes different music. You have an individuality as far as the arts. You're not just the bit of you that's ill. You're more a whole person. So we use the arts in very many different ways. Every way, every art program is tailored to the patients in a particular area. And I think we can't underestimate how frightening hospital is for some people. So I suppose the arts are important in enhancing the environment. One of the big projects we did over the last few years was the Irish Chamber Orchestra being resident in the hospital. I think it was the first time an orchestra was resident in a hospital in Ireland. And they performed in the waiting areas and with patient groups in age-related healthcare and in the neurology ward. And we did an evaluation of the benefit of live music. So patients were able to engage with that. We got overwhelmingly positive feedback about the benefit of listening to music while you're in hospital, live music, I mean, mainly in terms of relaxing both patients and staff. It made a big difference to staff as well, actually, in how busy and stressed they were feeling. And also then just about people felt that they were being cared about when they were waiting, that they weren't just being left to wait.
Music as a relaxant in the context of a hospital. And everybody is a winner, both the patients, the staff, and those who are visiting. Lest we not be convinced of how good music is for us, let's hear a few more words from street preacher Gordon.
There's a chemical, supposedly, that's in the released when you listen to Mozart, and it makes you're more able to really focus and to concentrate in different ways. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I do know one thing. When I'm listening to music that is highly ordered and that is very, very beautiful, I suppose beauty is really, it's in the eye of the beholder.
Oh, I've been listening to in the car to a piece of music. I think it's absolutely sublime. It's the Largo from Bach's second double violin concerto. And I think it's one of the most beautiful pieces of music in the world. Every time I listen to it, I think this is unbelievable.
And now a few final words on the benefits of music from some of our contributors.
It helps to relax the children, therefore if you have a relaxed child, they're going to concentrate more on other schoolwork, so therefore it's going to enhance them.
Well, I mean, I think for me, music is part of nature. It's very hard to envisage life without music. And I think if you look back into the historical anthropology of the human race, music has been always there as a release, as a means of expressing, if you like, the inexpressible.
You were listening to Music and Wellbeing, part one of a four-part series called Music is Good for You. This is 103.2 Dublin City FM. The programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.